Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Nonprofit Show. This is one of those really fun days for me because we are revisiting with one of our, one of our first guests when we were starting, right? 5 years ago, you were just a young whippersnapper that had this idea for this nonprofit, and then all hell broke loose. We had these pandemics. And bless your heart, you didn't give up, you kept going, and now you're like a super success. And so wanted to check back in with you and discuss kind of your journey and what you've learned and what you are learning and what you've overcome. It's not always rainbows and unicorns, as we know, in the nonprofit sector. And so this is going to be a lot of fun. Another thing that's a lot of fun is I'm joined today by one of our co-hosts, Mitch Stein from Chariot, coming to us from New York, Midtown Manhattan, correct?
That's correct, right here in Midtown.
Wow, amazing. Mitch is one of our new co-host, cohort of the co-host. and it's just been a delight, Mitch, to see you joining our team and working with us. And so we're going to be rolling out more and more of our co-hosts, and the panel is growing. And so we'll see you shortly. Mitch, I'm going to let you, I can't remember what I said, but I think I'm going to let you share who our sponsors are.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you for having me again, Julia. Excited to be here. Wanted to quickly thank all of our sponsors that make the show possible. So today we're sponsored by Bloomerang, the nonprofit American Nonprofit Academy, Staffing Boutique, Fundraising Academy, 180 Management Group, Your Part-Time Controller, JMT Consulting, Nonprofit Tech Talk, and the Nonprofit Thought Leader. So thank everybody for your support.
Thank you. It's really great. And you did a great job. Okay.
All right.
Derek Young Jr.
Oh my goodness. Thank you all so much, Julia, Mitch. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to be back. Yeah. So much to share, so many exciting things, so many things to unpack. So I'm excited to dig in.
Well, good. That's a great attitude. That's a great place to start. Mitch and I were talking, you know, in the beginning. Give us the quick recap, the elevator speech, whatever you want to call it, about leadership brainery. And if you could weave in your personal story, because it's really an interesting story.
Yeah, thank you so much. And so really quickly, you all, my partner, Jonathan Allen, and I, we started Leadership Brainery as a nonprofit in 2018. And it was through our lived experiences of going to competitive graduate programs, master's and doctoral degrees, and being one of the only men of color in our program. And so I went to Tufts School of Medicine for my master's in public health. I was the only Black man to come in 2015. And, you know, at that time, you know, I was really thinking about how do we ensure that we have more equity in medicine? And for me, that meant having more diverse perspectives in the classroom as we train our future practitioners and our future doctors and public health practitioners. And so I spent my time at Tufts really focusing on how do we create more diversity in medicine. And for me, that meant advancing access to advanced degrees. And then I went over because I couldn't get enough school. I went to Boston University for law school in I ended up leaving BU, but when I started, I was the only Black man to come in out of 250 students at BU Law, a top 20 law school. And so again, you know, we were seeing these demands from the workforce, especially in the legal space and the STEM space, of saying we need more diversity. But when we go to a lot of the competitive schools that many of the top companies are recruiting from, they're not seeing the diversity in the schools. And so how are we ensuring that we're even changing the conversation from beyond helping underserved and marginalized communities get to college, but get to the highest levels of education, master's and doctoral degrees. And there's not many efforts to help folks get to the highest levels of education. But we know that there are certain occupations like being a lawyer, a doctor, a psychologist, a dentist, an architect, a professor, that absolutely require advanced degrees. Yeah. But then you have a lot of occupations who also prefer, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics has shared that the fastest growing segment of the workforce currently are jobs that are requiring either a master's or doctoral degree at entry level. And so if our communities don't catch up soon, we're going to continue to see this wealth gap widen, because right now there are significant attacks on education and higher education and just knowledge as a whole in our country. And we're seeing things roll back. And so for us at Leadership Binary, we're pushing forward and going even harder because the attacks on our work are much more heightened than they were when we got started, Julie and Mitch, back in 2018.
I think Mitch and I are just like wow.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I just feel like those stats must be widely underappreciated. Do you get this similar reaction when you share those examples that people can't even believe that's still the case today?
Yeah, I get that reaction very often. And again, it's just because we don't talk about graduate school often. When we look at the 1970s, the American Medical Association reported in the 1970s, we had more Black men in med school than we had in 2019, 2020, and going forward. And so, you know, there's been just these time periods in our country where we saw some upticks, like in the late 70s and 80s. But then in the 90s and early 2000s, we started seeing things start to roll back, especially in the early 2000s with the recessions. A lot of universities started being much more risk adverse. And so opposed to admitting folks who needed more financial aid, like a lot of domestic marginalized communities, they really opened up the doors for more international students who could pay full tuition out of pocket. And so we've seen a big switch in who are at our competitive schools in our country, and as many international students opposed to many domestic students.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, you know, I love this background. I don't love what's happened, but I love that you could be a part of something. Your partner's part of the same thing. You come out of undergrad all excited, and then you see these problems. So how did you translate this and craft your mission? Because this is kind of a heavy lift to even just explain, let alone serve.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we're a Leadership Binary, so we focus on leadership. You know, how do we really ensure that, of course, we need folks at the entry level roles, but you can't stay there. You know, how do we have greater career mobility? And so we really shaped our mission around Leadership Binary increases access to master's and doctoral degrees so that underrepresented communities can establish wealth for themselves. And prosperity for their families, but then reinvest back in their communities. And so, you know, our theory of change really circles around how do we ensure underserved and low-income communities can access the highest levels of education, the highest level of the workforce, so then they can create wealth for themselves. But right now, what we're seeing is that even when you get into the workforce, if you don't have that career mobility to have decision-making power, those decisions that impact marginalized communities are still not being implemented significantly because they're not at the table sharing their experiences, the experiences of their communities. And so, you know, our goal is to really increase diversity at the leadership level to make sure that when decisions are made, even when philanthropic decisions from a lot of those companies, from their C-suite, that we're at the table. So when they do even their charity work, they're doing it from an equitable lens.
And I know you alluded to some dynamics that have shifted recently around this topic, but do you mind going a little deeper on what some of the biggest changes have been since you set that mission in 2018 and how that's evolved to today?
Oh, yeah. You know, so three things that I could really hit on that come to my mind immediately is definitely, of course, the pandemic and George Floyd. I'm going to just put those as one. And so, you know, with those spotlight on those two things, you did have a huge uptick in a lot of companies saying, hey, we want to support more diversity efforts, put in more money in. But I think anybody who's been in this work for a long time, whether you were in it in the 80s and the 90s or now, you know, those heightened spikes come down quickly. And so, you know, we saw a lot of money invested in 2020 and 2021. And then we started seeing a lot of this talk around like a lot of book bans and anti-DEI movements. And so immediately, you know, corporations started saying, oh, crap, you know, maybe I can't give money to diversity issues. Maybe we do need to get rid of our chief diversity officer. And so then we saw a quick downfall in our support from corporations. And now this past summer when the Supreme Court overturned affirmative action, that just heightened it even more. And so then we start getting the backlash from the universities that we work with. And so a big part of our model is partnering with universities to recruit our talent. And so we have partner schools, they pay a fee and they get a few different services from Leadership Brainery. But I have never spoken to so many general counsels in my life, you all, this past year. And they are very fearful of partnering with us because we do serve underrepresented talent. And when we say underrepresented, we serve first generation, low income and people of color. But they have a hard time separating those three, and they only hone in on the folks of color. And so they say, well, if you are serving directly people of color and you're partnering with our admissions offices, we can no longer support you or sign your contract because it's illegal to do diversity in admissions now. And so, or to use race as a determinant factor for admissions. And so, of course, that's not the case. You know, we do not do direct recruitment for institutions. We do much more exposure and outreach work. And so you come to us, we share all of our amazing pool of talent, and they still have to apply like everybody else. So they may get accepted, they may not. And so, you know, we feel like it's a very fair land. But, you know, I understand the fear in some universities just not wanting to deal with the lawsuits or potential lawsuits.
But Derek, I mean, I just feel like this is such a great example that I think is shared by many nonprofit leaders where like your cause can move in and out of vogue, to put it bluntly, swiftly, and how big of an impact that has on your day to day. Like, how are you doing personally with all this? Like, how are you managing with that change in receptivity? Like, I just imagine that has to be really, really burdensome for you too.
Yeah, it is, you know, but, you know, I think, of course, our students keep us going for sure. They're just absolutely incredible. They're doing so amazing, you know, in undergrad and currently now in graduate school. And so when we started LB, we had one very high touch program. And that very high touch program was our ambassador fellowship. And so we were selecting a handful of students at that time from around the country. We've now localized it to Boston, where we're headquartered. For that one program. And so we select 20 students each year. They get personal, professional leadership development, free test prep, free admissions coaching. And now our first year that this has been added, a $10,000 scholarship to go to graduate school. And so we're really excited about that. But, you know, what we really wanted to do with this small cohort was follow them for a couple of years, see if we can give them all of the support that they often don't have access to because of systemic barriers, whether it's cost or whether it's access. But right now, when you think about some of the prep companies in this space, like Kaplan or Princeton Review, to get a private admissions coach for graduate school is costing you between $5,000 and $10,000, not including, of course, the application fees that every school require. So like $100 application fee, when you get accepted, you got to give a seat deposit anywhere between like $500 to $1,000. And then if you have to take the GRE, the LSAT, any standardized tests, you now have to pay for those tests or pay to retake those tests. And so, you know, you're talking about spending in preparation anywhere from $5,000 to $15,000. And so we eliminate all those barriers for our cohort of students to say, hey, if you didn't have to worry about cost, you know, if you didn't have to worry about access, you know, where will you go? And we've seen our students now. We have first generation low income students at Harvard Law School, at Columbia School of Journalism, at Cornell Business, at Boston University Med, at Brown School of Medicine. Like, our students are just killing it, you know, across the board. And, you know, I mean, they're really just not only changing the trajectory for themselves, but their families and communities as well. And so, you know, I think being able to start there. And then last time I was on the show, we were talking about our online platform that we acquired through some Harvard Law students. And we were able to really expand our reach around the country in a more high-tech, low-touch way. And so now folks can sign up for our online platform. They can connect with our recruiters. They can share best practices on their journey to advanced degrees. We now have 1,500 users that we're serving on that online platform from around the country. And so we have a few different ways to like pivot to make sure our students still get the support that they need without necessarily having the support of the institutions. And then I know we're going to go into some of our successes and challenges a little later. But I think, and to answer your question, Mitch, this one last point is that we did not build Leadership Brainery to be dependent on large institutions, because we already knew that we're in this position mainly because of these large institutions. And so we started off very grassroots with individual donors, something that, you know, I tell a lot of nonprofit founders to take this approach. And so we now have over 850 individual donors at Leadership Brainery. Out of our $1.2 million budget, individuals make up 75% of our revenue. And, you know, it was really important for us to build a movement and to connect with folks' heart around the importance of education, the importance of access. And, you know, when you got to go through the corporations who are only worried about mainly return on investment, or, you know, the corporate foundations who say that graduate school is a luxury and then they want to do all this reporting and all of this, you know, it's like, hey, let's go to our individuals. Rather, you are given $10 or we have individuals given $75,000. You know, how do we ensure that those folks who actually care about the issues they're giving with their heart, in the next year, because they did that, they're more likely to give again.
Amazing. You know, I've got to ask this, and you're such a positive leader, and you know, I think what happens when we are in nonprofit leadership, a lot of times we get new challenges and new things. I mean, did you in your wildest dreams think that the Supreme Court would come down with something that would change the trajectory of your conversations? I mean, right? So talk to us about these challenges, and not just the challenges, but to kind of piggyback on what Mitch said, how have you personally overcome this and not just thrown in the towel? Because this is a heavy lift.
Yeah. Oh man, there's definitely so many challenges, but we continue to overcome things, and, you know, things I'm still learning. I mean, of course, Leadership Brainery is very young, but I'm also a very young leader. I'll be 31 this year. And when I started Leadership Brainery, I was 25, 26. And so, you know, it's definitely been an interesting journey for me even to learn, you know, how I manage and how I lead an organization and how I lead a team. But I would say the first challenge that I just alluded to was that we're in a very unique market. So we do graduate school access. And because, you know, there's not many other folks in our space, there's not a movement around. There's not a philanthropic pillar, you know, around how do we ensure folks get into master's and doctoral degrees. And so oftentimes, you know, when we go to foundations, they say, well, we support K through 12 and college access, but, you know, we don't support graduate school. That's like, you know, beyond college. And then, you know, and then they say, well, we have an economic empowerment pillar, but then that's job placement. And so, you know, you are not doing job placement either. So, you know, are you really doing economic empowerment? It's like, of course we're doing economic empowerment. We're creating lawyers and doctors and business folks. And so, you know, that's a very unique challenge for us. And we continue to get it, even when it comes to, like Mitch, what you alluded to earlier, like folks not knowing much about the stats. Like, we don't have the data. We don't have the research. Like, we need more folks to do research on access to advanced education and the impact that it has on our communities. We say something very often that sometimes we really got to walk people through, but it's that all roads lead to graduate school. And that's us saying that graduate school is not for everybody. However, we have to understand how we're positioned and how we are dependent on these folks every single day. All of us need to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, many of us go to the psychologist or a therapist. Many more of us need to go to therapists, right? Mm-hmm. You know, many of us need lawyers, or every business, every nonprofit needs a lawyer. We all, you know, some of us go to college. And so your professor, like, you know, do you want professors with diverse perspectives? Like, all of those things that we interact with every single day, you know, many of those occupations, architects, you know, that are building our downtowns, building all of our infrastructures. Like, how are we ensuring that more folks have access to those occupations? And because we interact with them every day, they're impacting our everyday lives. And so we try to tell people, like, hey, you know, graduate school may not be for you, but do you understand how it shows up in your life? And so that's what we often say, all roads lead to graduate school. And so, you know, that's one piece of us having to just continuously educate folks on what is master's and doctoral degrees, and then also the importance in their lives. And, you know, my second challenge is You know, because we are a small but mighty team, we've definitely grown significantly. So I have two new employees starting next Monday. And so we'll be a team of nine, which is beyond, you know, it's really incredible. And so, you know, I mean, we have three folks on our programs team, three folks on our development team, two folks on our recruitment team, and then you have myself. And so the thing with myself is that, you know, as ED, I'm also HR. I'm also our finance and accountant. I'm also our compliance person. And so I think one challenge that, you know, that has brought is that a lot of the times if my team does have any concerns or challenges where in a larger company, they may go to HR, you know, or they need something about their, you know, their pay stub or, you know, all that, they may go to finance. And so being the person that everybody comes to, I think, you know, sometimes it, excuse me, it doesn't give that that clear and comfortable position for folks to come to me about issues that they need to do their job, right? Because I'm also the person that they need to be off or they need the, you know, vacation time, I come and I approve it, or, you know, they feel like, will you not approve it? And so, you know, I'm trying to position ourselves more and more. And we're actually, we've been working with our operations manager as a consultant for a while, but, you know, I'm really excited to cultivate that role to see how do we have more of like the operations and chief of staff in the organization so I can show up for my team much more outside of those different nuanced things that I have to do. And lastly, the third challenge that I would say that we've had is because we built Leadership Braintree as a very high touch and high tech organization. Tech is evolving like rapidly, like crazy quickly, especially with AI. And so, you know, as our students are in college, you know, they are like, you know, they're on it. And so anything we're involved with, you know, they hope that that organization is on it too. And so it's like, you know, okay, now how do we adopt AI? Like, you know, how do we do all these things of traditionally nonprofits are, you know, behind when it comes to technology. And so we're really trying to keep up with the pace because we were really trying to stay in touch with our base. I mean, that's been the challenge. But, you know, we're learning a lot and we're trying our hardest to make sure that we can serve them in that way.
Amazing. Amazing. Mitch, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Derek, I was previously founded and was running my own startup. It was a company serving nonprofits, but very similar experience. You've got nine people, like you're the one, the buck stops with you. And it's awesome to hear that you're investing the time to build that infrastructure, to hire the right people, to start taking some of those things off your plate so you can excel. But it's not a straight path. It's like, it's a windy road to figure out the right balance there. So kudos to you for being mindful of that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now, you know, you've overcome so much. You've demonstrated that this is a really vital piece of success for so many different types of people, so many different communities. How would you kind of list out or quantify your achievements, given that, you know, you've gone through a period of incredible disruption that was not of your own doing, right? You know, an existential, you know, period of time across the globe. How do you look at your achievements? What have your wins been?
Yeah, we've had some incredible wins. And so I'm definitely proud of my entire team. And of course, you know, proud of our community, proud of our students. Let me start with more of a programmatic with our students. And so one thing that I'm extremely proud of is back a year ago, and I would say almost two, we had this vision to build a department called Strategic Alliances. And what we really wanted to do was ensure that we were partnering with other nonprofits, which is also really rare, that we were partnering with other nonprofits formally, like formal MOUs with other nonprofits to ensure that all of these organizations that are helping young people get to college. So whether you are middle school or high school and you're doing college readiness, you know, how are we ensuring there's a smooth transition to say, hey, I helped them get to college, but now many of them want to go to grad school and that's not what we do. We don't have the capacity. We don't have the expertise. And so it's a smooth transition to say, hey, you know, we partner with Leadership Braintree. Welcome to college. You want to go beyond that? You know, we have a partner for that. And so in the last year, we have signed on 16 strategic alliance partners, which has been absolutely incredible. And it's really just shifted all of our work. And so now we have roughly 50,000 students in our pipeline, which, again, you know, is so beyond me, because just a few years ago, we were having a hard time getting students to apply for our programs, again, because we were doing a lot of that. I'm trying to educate folks on the importance of advanced degrees. But now my team spends so much time out in the community talking to middle schoolers, talking to high schoolers around the importance of advanced education. So then when they get in college, they know that they have to take the right classes. They have to get those internships between summers, because all those things matter when you're applying to graduate school. They got to build relationships with their professors. They got to do research. If you want to do a PhD or you want to be into STEM. And so we're telling them all these things early on. So when they first get into college, they're just not like completely lost and, you know, thinking about their next path after that. And so that's been incredible. Our team has been really great in bringing those in. And, you know, as we continue to work to cultivate them, I know it's just going to add so much value. We went from having in the previous years around 40 applicants for our ambassador program. To last year, we had 98 applicants for 20 slots. And this year, our application just opened 2 weeks ago, and we already have over 200 nominations and over 50 applicants for 20 slots. And we have 2 months left in our application cycle. So I'm expecting about 200 to 300 applications. So that's incredible. It's a testament to our strategic alliances, them getting the word out to their students. But I just feel like more nonprofits need to partner when we are in a similar space, or we do different things in that space, you know, and just how are we making sure that we are supporting our communities holistically and not just like keeping them in the confounds of our work in particular. So that's been really great. So that's one thing that I'm really proud of. And then I would say on the operations side, we've adopted a couple years ago Asana as our project manager. And that has been a transformative tool for the organization. Everything is in Asana. You know, if it's not in Asana, it doesn't exist. And so, you know, like all of our workflows, we've done so many like automations with our CRMs, our emails, our other databases to make sure that we have just strong systems. And that's been really, really great. I talked to a lot of my nonprofit colleagues and nonprofits who've been around for decades. You know, and I show them our Asana and all the automation. If we get one answer, we press it and it does all of this. And they're just like blown away, you know, and I feel like, you know, so many nonprofits, you know, while, you know, capacity is an issue and just, you know, being able to adopt technology, you know, we're still doing a lot of documents and spreadsheets and Excel sheets. And, you know, how are we ensuring that we are now adopted into this new age of technology and really, you know, making our work easier for us, you know, using more AI tools and so forth. You know, we adopt all of that into Leadership Brainer, and I've seen it transform our team, our quality of work. Even our like to be able to better address gaps. We see those things through our goals and our metrics that we've been able to set up in Asana and so forth. So that's been great on the operational side. Transformative.
Go ahead. I interrupted. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and lastly, on the development side, I already mentioned, I'm really proud of our development team. Just in 5 years and only three full time. Being able to now have a $1.2 million budget, it's just, you know, really incredible. Thank you all. We're really proud of that. It's a testament to our community and them showing up for us and them really understanding the importance of our mission. And so that's been a huge success.
Well, I'm just like, this is a fabulous way for Mitch, don't you think, to start the week?
Oh, my God. Yes. I'm like so inspired.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Derek Young Jr., founder, executive director of Leadership Brainery. Check out their website, leadershipbrainery.org. It's beautifully done. It has a lot of video. It really goes into what the students look like, what the clubhouse that they have in Boston looks like, what they're doing, where they're doing it. It is so robust, and it just continues to get better and better. Derek Young Jr., I do not want to wait 5 years to get you back here, my friend.
Yes, indeed. We cannot. No. I have a lot of updates for you next year.
I think so. I really think so. And I think when I was watching Mitch's face, when you started going through some of these stats, I think we were both just like mortified, right? And so to hear this journey and to learn more about this behooves us all. And it's something that we need to be understanding, right? As, yeah. you know, yeah. As our culture changes and shifts. So really yeah. been fun to reconnect with you and to learn more about what's going on. Mitch, I'm going to let you take us out, my friend.
Yeah. And I would just add to that. I'm so glad you also broke it down into some like operational, actionable things other nonprofits can take from this, not just like headline pretty picture, but the tech you're using, your fundraising strategy, it's all great. So thank you so much for sharing all that. Thank you to our sponsors again for today, Bloomerang, American Nonprofit Academy, Staffing Boutique, Fundraising Academy, 180 Management Group, your part-time controller, JMT Consulting, Nonprofit TED Talk, and the Nonprofit Thought Leader. Thank you to all of you and to all of our audience. Be sure you stay well so you can do well. Thanks for joining the Nonprofit Show.
Hey, everybody. Thank you. Derek, we got to let you go. You're a busy man.
Thank you all so much. And like we always say at Leadership Brainery, the best is yet to come. So thank you.
Love it.
I love it. That's a great way to end. We'll see you back here tomorrow, everyone, for another episode of the Nonprofit Show. Thank you, gentlemen.